Margaret Atwood, Moral Disorder, 2006. Most collections of short stories by a single author are grab bags, but some approach or achieve real unity. It is a different unity from that of the novel and deserves some attention. The gaps between stories, the lack of obvious continuity, preclude the supporting structures of conventional plot. If the stories tell a story, it must be read in glimpses and through the gaps, a risky gambit, but one which offers singular freedom of movement and ironic opportunity. In such episodic narratives, character, place, and/or theme replace plot as unifying elements. Elizabeth Gaskell's Cranford and Sarah Orne Jewett's Country of the Pointed Firs are both about a single town and a few strong characters. Each book seems to have begun as a local color story or two written for periodicals, the success of which led the author to further explorations of Cranford or Dunnett's Landing, and to the realization that she was in fact writing a work of considerable length and scope. Freed from the tyrannies of Victorian plotting, both these lovely books developed locality and character with a lightness and subtlety that was rare then, and is still rare now. Though it seems to me a genuine form, this kind of book has no accepted name, perhaps because it's an exception rather than a rule. Many collections that pretend to unity merely fake it. That does have a name, a fix-up. A collection of short stories stuck together with some kind of expository word glue, invented after the fact, or merely arranged in hope that recurrences or similarities of place, person, or theme will hold the pieces together. Ray Bradbury's Martian Chronicles is an example. Interstory glosses patch over contradictions and anachronisms, but the stories don't really tell a coherent history, and parts remain far more memorable than the whole. Yet Fix-Up seems an unnecessarily disdainful name for that lovable book, and it absolutely won't do for Cranford. We need a name for a book that is truly a story told in stories. Could we call it a story suite? Moral Disorder consists of 11 short stories. Is it a collection, a fix-up, or a suite? A suite, I think. Place, perhaps the commonest cement of the story suite, is not very important, but the stories have a single protagonist, a central character. Or I think they do. She is variable, elusive, even a bit slippery. This is, after all, a book by Margaret Atwood. 7 of the stories are told by an I, who remains nameless, 4 from the third-person point of view of Nell. It's easy to project Nell into all the stories, because they run in chronological order from childhood to age. The central figure is always female, and there are definite clues that Nell is the protagonist, even when not named. Such clues are needed, for there isn't very much in the first-person stories of childhood and adolescence to connect the girl to the woman Nell. No strong sense of character or destiny, no overriding reason to think this is or isn't the same person. The last two stories concern a woman's experience with her father entering dementia, her mother in extreme old age. The daughter may well be Nell. The parents may be the parents of the child in the earlier stories, but I had no feeling of recognition, of rejoining the same people at a later stage of life. The book did not quite form a whole for me, an architecture, a life story, however episodic. The glimpses are brilliant, but the gaps are wide. Things happen to Nell. She accepts what happens. This is not a portrait of a powerful character, perhaps rather an intimation of experience shared by many women. So character is not a strong bond. Locality ties only a few of the stories together. And if the stories are connected by theme, I haven't found what it is yet. What they have in common is a clear eye, a fine wit, and a command of language so complete it's invisible, except when it's dazzling. One story is dramatically and effectively out of place. Starting with the second story, we follow Nell through the years from her childhood with sister and parents, through the vicissitudes of semi-marriage. Does Tig, in fact, ever divorce that ghastly wife and marry her? The trials of amateur farming and late parenthood, and at last to her middle age, the daughter of parents at the edge of death. But the first story in the book is chronologically the last, a portrait of Nell and Tig in their old age, when they are the parents on the edge of death. Why this reversal works so well, I don't know. Perhaps because the bad news is a stunning opener, electric with wit, energy, Atwood's achingly keen sense of fear and pain. She has never been sharper, drier, funnier, sadder. And there was wisdom in not putting this story last, because the last two are about dying, the end, and this one isn't. Quite. Not yet. Not yet is aspirated, like the H in honor. It's the silent, not yet. We don't say it out loud. These are the tenses that define us now. Past tense, back then, future tense, not yet. We live in the small window between them, the space we've only recently come to think of as still. And really, it's no smaller than anyone else's window. The uncomplaining, absolute accuracy of this is most admirable. The bad news really has some news for its readers. None of the other stories entirely escape conventionality. Not a word I'd expect to use about Atwood. The subjects are familiar tropes of the current short story. Miseries and confusions of childhood, city people learning life on a subsistence farm, dysfunctional family members, Alzheimer's. They are not quite predictable, but near it, though there is a patience, a kindness in the tone, which is not common. Atwood doesn't pull any of the surprises, the narrative flights and dodges she's so good at, except in that first story. There the old Canadian couple morph quietly into an old Roman couple in a small Gallic town called Glanham, which Nell and Tig once visited as tourists. Breakfast is good whether in Toronto or Glanham, but the world is not in good shape. Terrorism, barbarians threatening the empire. The news is all bad. The news is always the same and always bad. And what are two old people supposed to do about it? This gentle, plausible slide into a fantasy that deepens reality is Atwood at her slyest and sweetest. There really is nobody like her.